This is the 919 Beer Podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Now, here are your hosts for the 919 Beer Podcast, Joe Ovius, Adam Eschbaugh, and Wayne Holt.
It's the 919 Beer Podcast. Joe Ovius from 99.9 The Fan in Raleigh, North Carolina. Adam Eschbaugh and Wayne Holt. We're all together again.
Together again. Together forever.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
That's from Annie,
by the way.
And Broadway hit.
We're on the road again as we are at Carolina Brewing Company out here in Holly Springs. Joe Zonin is with us. Joe,
Hola. It's
been a while.
It has. It's been
well, at least since I've seen you, apparently.
Well over a year.
Has it been that long?
Yes.
Okay. But actually, the reason why we're out here is really for the longer-term thing, not just a year since we've done the podcast, 25 years of CBC.
Yes, sir. Started in 1995.
I bet you never thought you'd go through a pandemic in 25 years.
No, did not ever think about that. It certainly was not in any of the business plans that we wrote.
So let's, I feel like we should kind of start there. And in the 25 years of Carolina Brewing, of all the times in which you thought, oh man, this is going to be tough, or, you know, different, you know, the changes in how people drink, the changes in, the area, people moving out here, because it's not like this is an easy spot to get to 10 years ago, but now it's like no big deal because everything has grown up. So I guess, what has it been like over the last 25 years of just the changing nature of the craft beer scene here in Raleigh and in the Triangle?
You've talked about it a lot. Two of the biggest things would be people's beer drinking habits, as well as the population growth in this area. So when we started, Holly Springs was a town of 900 people. Holly Springs today goes around 30,000 or so?
38,000.
There you go. So that's quite an increase over 25 years. And there were no stoplights, no grocery stores, none of that kind of fun stuff. So Holly Springs has been great. Holly Springs has grown up around us, and we feel fortunate that we picked this area. It's been very well received in this area.
Rent had to be cheap back then.
It was cheap. it's still a decent price compared to a lot of other places around the Triangle.
Sure, sure.
And that was certainly something that we considered right off the bat. It was one of the things that we wanted to control. When we started, we knew we weren't going to have a bar or a tap room or anything like that right off the bat. All of our sales was going to be out to other bars and restaurants. So where exactly we located didn't really matter. It didn't have to be prime real estate. It needed to be a good, new, clean construction and somewhere in the middle of the Triangle, so to speak.
Yeah, I think people probably don't realize that when you came here way before the bypass, way before Target, way before 12 Oaks, this industrial park you're in, you had to be one of the first five or six buildings, I would suspect.
I think it was the second building.
Yeah, I was going to say. I mean, I grew up in Holly Springs, as you guys know, but
it wasn't paved when we first opened
right,
up.
It was
a dirt
absolutely,
road.
Absolutely, right.
We would load down our delivery truck. So we did our own deliveries at the start. And we would load down our delivery truck and then go fishtailing out of here on a red clay muddy mess after every rain.
So we've talked about this before when you've been on. And as you come up on your 25th anniversary, I think we talked at 20 years. But let's talk about it again. Why Holly Springs? I know you guys came here. You looked a lot of places. How'd you end up in Holly Springs? Especially that far ahead of what's now 37 times the size it was when you were here, when you came?
Yeah, as I talked about, once we decided on the Triangle area, we just looked for some warehouse space. One of the big things that we were looking for was a new warehouse. We looked at a lot of existing warehouses, one that had a lot of wood in them, like wooden beams and stuff like that, which is great for a restaurant or a bar, but when you're manufacturing something and you're creating a lot of heat and humidity and stuff like that, it's a place for stuff to grow. So we wanted something that was newer, more concrete and steel, so we'd have a little bit cleaner atmosphere to work in. So we actually heard about this place before it was even built, and that was a huge advantage to us that we were able to place every electrical outlet where we wanted it by sitting down with the architects, all the floor drains. I mean, some of the older kind of tobacco warehouses that we were looking at and stuff like that, you're talking about going in, pulling up concrete, mm-hmm. cutting concrete, pulling it up, installing drains, all that kind of stuff, yeah. So,
but now if you're starting a brewery in 2020, those are the types of things you probably look for.
Yeah, if you're going to do your tap room, too. If you're looking for a production facility, which is what we always wanted to be, yeah. more so than a brew pub, I think you look for more something like what we've got here as a warehouse. If your main focus is going to be your tap room and that's where your sales are going to be driven, then something more rustic has a lot more appeal to it.
And I think the last time we were all together, I was included on the beer podcast, you were just getting around to having this tap room completed or had just been completed and you had seen the turnaround in the direct beer sales. And again, back in 1995, people weren't necessarily thinking about that. You're probably thinking more of a traditional model. Make the beer, make it good, sell it locally, get it to the grocery stores, et cetera. It worked.
Right.
So at what point in that time frame did you realize, wait a minute, we have to kind of reconsider that model? You've seen a lot of other people do that first on premises. Let's focus on this. Let's not fight for shelf spaces. We're going to make more of our money. But then a pandemic happens. And now everybody who was focused on getting people in can't. So how has that kind of shifted how even you approach things right now?
Yeah, so you're right about the timing of it. We went 20 years without a tap room. Mm-hmm. We put this in, and it opened up just after our 20th anniversary. Mm-hmm. So it's been open for 5 years now. And we had thought about it for a couple of years before that, obviously. We kick around things a little bit. I think what really got us was, one, you see other people being successful with tap rooms.
You're sure.
Like, all right, we could do something up front. We could change that little tasting room into more of a tap room. We think about it now and again. But I think the thing that really pushed us, people started coming in on Thursday and Friday at 5 o'clock, 4 o'clock, looking around and going, oh, you don't have a bar? I can't sit down? And we were like, no, we're happy to sell you a six-pack to go,
yeah.
But we don't have a tap or a bar or a bartender up here up front or anything like that. You know, we're kind of in the back running the kegging machine or running the bottling line. And they would come in. So that started happening more and more where people just expected us, would show up expecting us to have a tap room. Like, wow, you really hate to turn people away. And, you know, we'd sell them a six-pack. But I think that's when we really started getting more interested in it. I think at the beginning, when we opened up in 95, we were so far off the beaten path that we didn't think that anybody would kind of find their way out here. And I think as the town grew, it became easier. I think people also, with their drinking habits, started looking for a little bit more out-of-the-place ways. The brewery down the road, down this gravel road, or the brewery hidden out in this little neighborhood area, started becoming more destinations.
Mm-hmm.
So I think those two things combined made us realize the potential for the tap room. So again, you know, we took our time, we designed it, and opened it up shortly after the 20th anniversary.
Well, and thanks to the growth of Holly Springs, like we talked about, like you guys, everything's grown up around you.
Right.
Right? This used to be, coming from US 1, this was the beginning of the middle of nowhere. Then you had Avent Ferry Road, which was the middle of nowhere until you hit Fuquay, right?
Yes.
Like those were the spots. Like,
and in Fuquay, we were back somewhere because
that was the days when the bypass was a bypass.
Right.
It was actually faster to use the bypass than it was to go
down Main
Holly
Street.
Springs business, as we like to call it, Wayne.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah, let me tell you guys about Holly Springs business pre-1995. Let me tell you about 1970. 1975, you didn't drive down Holly Springs business after about 10 o'clock on a Friday or Saturday night unless you were ready to go and ready to go fast because you had to get through town. There's two or three places. In fact, one of them still stands today. The other one's a dog pound up across from where, not a dog pound, but a dog park near where you used to live.
Yeah.
There was the Pack House and the Shaft Club.
Notice how Wayne's accent just got thicker.
Full on spring.
Oh, man. I mean,
you liked that, right?
That took him to a place.
It did. Takes me to a place. That's for another podcast, though.
Well, but you've told me some of those stories. Your dad, when your dad was sheriff, right? Sheriff's deputy, right? Yeah. Before the days of Holly Springs PD. And when I moved down here, the days of Holly Springs PD, they were in PT Cruisers.
Yeah.
Nice. Nice. So how have sales been on packages? I mean, I've read all sorts of you know, post-sale information about how people were buying in larger quantities. They weren't necessarily going for four packs anymore. It's more you go to a spot, you buy more of it in one shot because you want to limit the times you go to the store. So how has that affected y'all and what you've been doing and what you're shipping?
Yeah, actually, our volume hasn't changed that much. It's down a little bit.
Okay.
Right off the bat, when the pandemic first hit, I think there was that panic, almost like the pre-hurricane panic, where people went in and bought anything that was there. If they had it, not had it, they just wanted to make sure they had some beer in the house. So we got that spike in sales right when things first shut down. Then things slowed down quite a bit. I think we've the only thing that I've really noticed is been a little bit of a shift to more people buying directly from the brewery. So I think there's more people coming out here and buying their six packs directly from us. That certainly has gone up considerably, and then less people maybe in the grocery store, which kind of evens out between the two. But we've been fortunate. A lot of people in Holly Springs have been coming over, buying from us directly, and it's been a really good business model for us. We've been really appreciative of people that have come out here and bought from us directly.
So what's your largest package? I mean, are you six packs only, or you do 12s, 15s, or anything else?
We do 12 packs. We've done Carolina Pale Ale in 12 packs for a number of years now. We talk occasionally about doing something else, possibly a mixed 12-pack at some point or something like that. But I don't see us doing anything bigger than a 12-pack. I mean, you can come out here at the brewery and buy it by the case, but out in the grocery stores and stuff like that, I don't think we'll go past a 12-pack.
Yeah, I mean, because we talked about this early on in COVID, how some of the larger craft breweries were putting out the 15s or the cases, the suitcases, whatever. At a great price. So people were going in and buying, you know, the Del's Pale Ale or the Sierra that might be in the 15. So, and I bring that up because last week I'm looking for something. I'm having some people over to watch the Yankees opening game, and I wanted something, but I didn't want to spend a ton of money because these guys were PBR drinkers typically, and I just didn't want to do PBR. So ended up buying a Goose Island IPA 15-pack, and it was like $12.99 or something. It was really inexpensive. Like, yeah, that'll work just fine. So I think that's what I was asking. You said more people are coming here, but I think that's probably because they can come here and buy larger quantities as opposed to the grocery store where they're competing with people at the grocery store looking for that value.
Yeah, I think you're right there. And people that come out here generally are buying in larger quantities. And they like the curbside pickup. We'll bring it right out to them and put it right in their trunk for them, stuff like that. When you got that 15-pack, was it in cans?
Yes.
Yeah, so typically, most of the time, once you get past a 12-pack, you're going to find it in cans because it's a little bit lighter and easier for people to handle and stuff like that. Since we bottle only since we do only bottles on a regular basis, we probably wouldn't go much past a 12-pack because it just gets to be too cumbersome. But the cases out of the brewery work great.
Can we talk beer now?
Yeah,
like fun beer, like drinking beer.
Let's do it.
What?
No, we got to talk business so we can get a negative review. Joe's got to kick in.
Yeah, no.
Tell people how to run their business.
I'm good.
Joe's over there in his post Asheville hangover right now. We got to compensate for his. He's fatigued.
I am fatigued. I was not in Asheville for very long. I probably spent 3 hours, 4 hours in Asheville because we had gone to a place called Wilderness Cove. That's by Saluda, North Carolina. There was nothing in Saluda. So I thought that we were actually going to go into Asheville on Monday, and I was going to pick up some craft beer or wherever. I don't know where we're going to go or a bottle shop, whatever. So I didn't have any alcohol, so my buddy Ryan, who we were with, their family, he doesn't like craft beer. He drinks, like, High Life. That's all he had. So we went through his case of High Life pretty fast.
That's good stuff.
And there's nothing wrong with High Life. It is the champagne of beer. So the next day, after we got off the Green River, where we spent about 5 hours on a tube. By the way, shout out to Wilderness Cove. If you're looking to get away, it is cheap, man. Like, you could stay there on the property. You could primitive camp, whatever. But the tube for 4 to 5 hours, oh, it's only $15 a tube. And the Green River is kind of fun. It's definitely, the water's clear. It's dam controlled. It's not like the French Broad, where you don't know, like, if there's, you know, junked cars underneath you at any point in time. True story. Do the New Belgium tour. They'll tell you all about that stuff, what they uncovered when they reclaimed the site. So I went into town, the closest town of Saluda, to see what I could find. There's three spots that you could hit. You got a Dollar General. You have two gas stations. So I went to the Dollar General because I needed to get some supplies, some like cleaning supplies and whatnot. But what do you think the Dollar General beer selection looks like? Oh, yeah, they got beer at Dollar General. Yeah, some do. So I got a 12-pack of PBR, you know, good base layer. So then I went to this one.
What'd your friend drink?
Right. We split those. So then went to the one gas station, and they didn't have any craft beer. They had just your normal domestic stuff and then, like, hard seltzers. And then I went to this other gas station that was more of like a mom and pop. And sure enough, along with your 40s of High Life and various other stuff, in the corner, they had actual North Carolina craft beers there.
Were
they
Did you check the dates on those?
Were they dusty?
So they had like
I'm sure the dates were.
Oh, they had like a Catawba. They had a Catawba mixer, you know, like that kind of stuff. They also had a lot of. They had a lot of Sierra Nevada. So my guess is that they had one like Fantastic Haze or something like that. But that was like 9%. I was not no. So this was mainly like, what's Kelly gonna drink? And that's why I'm like, oh, they got Pernicious. Fine, done. Like, I know what I'm getting with the Pernicious. So that was the beer selection up until we went to Asheville. And as I was mentioning before we even started the podcast, it was weird, man. You know, like, every time you go anywhere near the South Slope, it's usually crawling with people. It doesn't matter if it's in the middle of the week. People are just going there to enjoy all the breweries. And Kelly's a big fan of Burial because of all the sours. I wanted to go because looking at the menu, they've started messing around with lagers, and they had a
Burial's had a pretty solid lager program for a few years.
They have. So, like, the one, what did I have? I took a picture of the board because I couldn't remember any of this stuff. I did have To Streak Blood Across My Brow, which is
that there. Totally sounds like a Burial name.
Oh, no, it's totally a Burial beer. That's their 8.5% super haze, bro.
Cool.
And then I had the Contrition, which was their pills. And then I had the Provisions. No, that's not what I had. I had their Fooder-aged black lager, the Pitiless Indifference. And then I had the Provisions, which is where their Fooder-aged extra-strong lager. I like the extra-strong lager out of the Fooder. But anyway, the point being, it doesn't matter if it's Asheville or here.
I was just asking. I just said you look tired, man. That's all.
It's called transition.
I just want to know what's up with his face mask. It's not really a face mask. It's a band.
It's a bandana.
It's a bandana being worn as an ascot.
Well, when I'm in the station, I can pull it up at any time.
I mean,
face masks don't work for me, man.
I'm thinking, has Joe been watching Yellowstone and he needs to change his shirt and put on a hat?
No.
To be a real cowboy?
Is he wearing boots?
It's that meme when you got to rob a train, but you got a sports talk show at 3 p.m.
Right. Look, man, when I'm back at the station, I've tried all sorts of masks. I swear I've tried all sorts of masks, okay? And I got a big-ass face. I got a big nose, and I got big ears. So none of this stuff works out for me. My ears end up flaring out like Dumbo. The mask doesn't fit my nose
right. I feel like
right.
We need to get this man a couch and just let him right. lay back
so,
and let it flow.
So I started doing the research. I'm like, all right, what if I just get 100% cotton bandanas that I fold over so you get the two layers.
Yeah, I have some at the brewery.
And apparently those are good enough. Okay, we're good now.
That bandana's the size of a king-size blanket, man.
Well, here's the other problem. I got normal bandanas, 21 by 21. I end up looking like one of those idiots where, like, my chin's hanging out because they're not big enough. So this is a 27
Instead,
by 27.
I got a queen-size pillowcase on my face.
I got a 27 by 27. No, I got a 27 by 27.
Is there a specialty site for extra-large bandanas?
Amazon. So
is that elastic in the back to make it fit?
No, it's double-tied. So I can. No, but it doubles as a babushka. You know, I can look like Cam Newton.
You cannot speak to me like that.
Putting it over my head like that. I look just like an old Russian maid. So that's where we are. Anyway. I brought up Asheville because even the South Slope, which we all associate with beer, 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 dealing with the same crap. And it was wild to me to go to places that are typically packed to the gills. Nobody walking around. The Funkatorium was empty at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Burial I'd never seen as quiet as it was when we were hanging out there. Walked by. We thought about jumping into Buxton Hall and take the kids to have the Cheerwine slushy because we know they'd be about that. But they're doing takeout only. Like, they don't have any outdoor seating or anything like that.
Yeah.
So it was wild to me to walk around Asheville. So all that is to say, what you're dealing with, Joe, is everybody's dealing with it. Like, all across North Carolina, even in the places that you associate as bustling beer stuff, not, you know, tucked away in Holly Springs somewhere, everybody's dealing with this right now, and everybody's having to deal with it in different ways.
Yeah, and to a certain degree, we have to feel fortunate in that pre-pandemic, tap room was only maybe 5-10% of our business. So when the tap room had to close, it wasn't nearly as detrimental to us as it was to a lot of those other people that you're talking about that relied a lot more on their in brewery sales. So the fact that we still had such a good presence out in the marketplace certainly made the closing of the tap room less painful. Still painful, but less painful.
Well, one of the things you guys do, back to actual beer.
Beer.
One of the things you guys do every year around your anniversary, you come up with an anniversary beer, right?
Yes, sir.
2 years ago, it was Be Like Mike.
For the 23rd anniversary.
For the 23rd year.
You're in North Carolina. You have a number 23 anniversary. You got to name it after Mike.
Yeah. Yeah. That beer has stuck around. Your anniversary beers are usually kind of like a one-off thing.
That's the first ever beer that we have had made into a regular beer.
Yeah.
We've had some that we've remade like once or twice more, but this is the first time that we've ever made one that we've said it's a keeper.
Yeah, so you guys hung on to that. It's a New England IPA in name, but it's a little closer to like a pale ale, and it's not overly chicken stocky in the look. It's pretty balanced. I actually drink it, which will be a good indication of how New England is it. It's a nice, as you would say, tasty liquid here at Carolina Brewing Company. Last year, you guys went old school and went back to your original IPA, but you dry hopped it, right?
Correct.
It was called Resurrection, I believe.
Yep, resurrected the old IPA.
Loved it. Loved it.
Yeah,
it was.
Me too.
It had a solid malt body. It was just nice hops that shined through. Like it was just a really nice IPA. Now this year, you've kind of revisited Big Mike, Be Like Mike, but you did kind of an imperial twist to it.
Yeah, we decided this year that we would make a little bit higher alcohol. A lot of people have asked about a little bit higher alcohol hazy from us, so we've been thinking about it for a while, and this year's anniversary seemed like a good time to do it, so we introduced Big Mike, which is based on the Be Like Mike formula. It's actually the same, pretty much the same malt base as the Be Like Mike, obviously a little bit more barley in there to raise the alcohol level, and then it's got a little bit different hop lineup than our Be Like Mike.
Yeah, I taste it. It's very nice.
Thank you.
7.9% is not something I want to do during the middle of work day. However,
amateur.
If I do have a bone to pick, it's this.
Oh, no, here it goes.
If I'm going to do a Be Like Mike beer, I'm making a Gatorade sour.
What color, though?
It's got to be green.
Does it?
It's got to be green.
Yeah, I guess
OG.
Yeah.
I mean, you're one of the OGs in North Carolina.
This is true. I like it. I like it. I mean, the idea.
Sometimes I dream that he is me. Do you want me to just sing the rest of it, Joe?
No, I don't, actually.
Yeah.
Let's move on.
I want to be like Mike.
See? You know what I'm saying? I'm just joking, but maybe next year next year you go that route.
As of this moment of the recording, I have not tried any of these things yet because my first thought was, you know what? Let me just go ahead and have an OG pale ale.
The original beer that we made.
Mm-hmm.
And
that was the only beer you made for a while,
That's the only beer you made.
I was just going to say.
sorry.
To again,
like we've talked about this, like, and I want to hear it again.
To see how old we are, when we opened up for the first 5 months that we were opened up, we made one beer and one beer only. It was Carolina Pale Ale, and it was available in one package and one package only, a 15.5-gallon half-barrel keg.
Wow.
No bottles, no ponies, no cylinders, no cans, half barrels of Carolina Pale Ale only for 4 months.
You'd be and run out got, of the state today.
And then we got crazy and added the brown ale on after that.
Wow.
Yeah, things really started to take off.
Hey now, don't get too crazy.
Yeah.
But the pale ale stuck.
The Pale Ale is still our flagship. It's still our best-selling beer.
Yep.
The Be Like Mike is actually probably our fastest-growing one.
Yep.
As far as total volume of sales, Carolina Pale Ale is it. It's the one that I tell this to people a lot, too. Carolina Pale Ale is the beer that allows us to make all the other beers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If we don't sell Carolina Pale Ale, enough Carolina Pale Ale, we don't have the ability to venture out and try more risky stuff or other stuff that we want to try. So for that, and this is the same for a lot of breweries, that flagship is what allows them to make the other stuff.
You know what's hot right now, though, right? Retro packaging.
How retro?
I mean, maybe you go back.
Because I know you go Green Gatorade.
I mean, I know you guys. I know you guys have redone your bottles and like that here in like the last 5 years or so. I don't know. Maybe go back to the original pale ale sticker on a bottle. See how that works.
After spending all that money on the rebrand a few years ago.
No. But people like the retro.
This guy, huh?
They like the retro.
Get another huge bandana, Joe.
Yeah, I know. I will. I got a white one and a red one.
Nice.
I can accessorize.
Same pattern.
Yes, actually, it is the same pattern because, again, it's Amazon. You're kind of
meanwhile,
stuck with
Kelly's at the house wondering what happened to her throw pillow covers in the living room.
Yeah, it's not a story altogether. So the Be Like Mike is your fastest growing
right now. Yes.
Okay. And then the Big Mike is, to circle back on this, the Big Mike is a take on that, but...
A little higher alcohol version take on the Be Like Mike, and it is designed to be a one-shot deal.
Okay.
Just a single batch.
That's why I'm saving it for the last thing here.
I mean, you know, I'd be interested to kind of dive more into this. Be Like Mike, since you started making it, has, you know, surged, right? Before you were making Be Like Mike, though, was Hop Roar the one that was really... making a splash? Because I remember when you first made Hop Roar, you came in, I remember you walking in, handing me a bottle at Mason Jar over here in Holly Springs. You're like, this is our new West Coast. We're releasing it next week. I want you to taste it. And you hadn't done one. You had a regular IPA and it was 5.6, 5.8, something like that.
Right.
Hop Roar came on straight up West Coast, crisp, clean, clear, 7.5%. Like, it packs a punch.
Yes, sir.
But What was that one looking like as far as, you know, how was that one selling, and then how did Be Like Mike affect that?
I think the Hop Roar wasn't on quite the upward pattern that the Be Like Mike is. The Hop Roar did well for us, but it never went like crazy, like over the top. We had a bunch of people that enjoyed it. We still make it all the time. It's one of our year-round beers.
I keep it on a mason jar.
Yeah, it does well for us, but it never like got... I don't know, it never really took off on like an upward trajectory the way Be Like Mike did. And actually, when Be Like Mike came out, it didn't affect the Hop Roar sales much.
Yeah,
Hop
that
Roar
was sales, the next question.
Yeah, Hop Roar sales are still good and steady. It hasn't eaten into the Hop Roar sales. I think that there are different enough IPAs, and people, you know, they're both technically IPAs, but they are such different beers in bitterness level and alcohol level and citrusiness in so many different levels that I think it's two fairly different drinkers between the Hop Roar.
That's what I was going to say. I feel like there's a West Coast crowd and there's a New England crowd, and not that they don't talk to each other, but they don't necessarily drink the same beers.
I agree.
Yeah, I remember when you first introduced that beer and having the first one and going, yeah, this is a home run. I was at Bond last week, I think, or maybe the week before, and they had some of your product up there that they were selling. And I'm like, so is this just to go, or can I have it here? He says, no, if you get it, we'll just pour it in a glass for you. Yeah, that's what I did. I got a Hop Roar at Bond, which is one of my favorites. But Bond doesn't do a whole lot of West Coast IPAs. They do the New England's. And I honestly, I lean more toward the West Coast than I do the New England. So, yeah, it was still a great beer.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
So I am curious as to how many new beers are you rolling out during this time? You know, given all the things that are a little bit different, you can't get as many people here to like just kind of, hey, this is new. Because you know how it is. People come in, what's new?
Right.
So how has that affected the experiments, the let's try something new ideas?
I think we get into that a little bit less than some of the other breweries around. One of the things is because we have a fairly large brew house.
Yeah.
I mean, the smallest batch of beer that we make generally is a 20-barrel batch.
Okay.
So that's a pretty big amount to throw out there just on a whim. We still do some of it. I think we've cut back a little bit, but typically, as I said, in a given year, we may only introduce 6 new beers. We're not somebody that comes out with a new beer every other week or something like that. So it's cut back on that a little bit, but not tremendously.
Okay. Yeah, I guess if you're not really doing it a lot during the year, then it's not going to. Because, like, hey, you walk in, you see a big new, you know. So I was just curious
So obviously the Big Mike is something that's new. And then we've done some other stuff. We've got a Pilsner that is somewhat new for us. We've only been making it off and on since the end of last year, the Pace Yourself Pilsner. So that's new, and that's nice and light for the summertime. So it's not completely brand new. Some of the stuff that we used to do is make casks for the bar that would qualify more for unique stuff. A little 5-gallon cask where we take one of our existing beers and maybe add a little flavor to it or something like that. And we're doing a little bit less of that because there's less of the in-house crowd right now. Doesn't make sense to do a cask when you're only expecting 30 people out for the night or something like
that. Gotcha. Oh, I thought Wayne had something.
No.
Yeah, when Wayne has the mic, I expect hot fire.
I didn't have anything, even though the mic is red, though.
Oh, boy. That's unfortunate.
I was off on another tangent.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Okay. All right, well, then I'll pivot in this particular
game. Notice he had nothing to say, but he wouldn't give up that mic.
Isn't that weird? What he was gripping that mic tight.
Man.
Like, if you got nothing, just give it back
to Adam.
Probably
wrestle it away from him.
I mean, geez, man. What's up with that? My goodness.
Well, Joe, what do things look like going forward? I mean, obviously, I cringe now using the word pivot, but geez, I mean, that's the word of the year. Where are we going? Like, what do you see as far as, you said you got that initial spike, things have kind of leveled off, but what are we thinking for?
I wish I could tell you.
What are you strategizing, I should say?
I wish I could tell you. I mean, we talk about it all the time, and from week to week, it's hard to plan on anything. You know, yeah. You plan on doing your basics, but trying to plan on a new beer or doing an event, you know, the anniversary, we had a lot of plans for the anniversary party at the beginning of the year.
Right. There was talk about doing it at Sug Farm.
We were on our way there.
Mark and I were talking about, you know, how to make that happen.
That was good. That was our plan, to make that happen. So a lot of that stuff, I don't see a whole lot of reason to put a lot of planning into something when you really don't know what's going on. I mean, planning enough is hard enough when you know a fairly good idea of what's going to happen. But as it is now, and the way the numbers are going, and there's just so much stuff that makes it really difficult to plan on. So we've got stuff that we talk about. I don't think we're going to actually act on any of them anytime soon, but there's certainly stuff that we'd like to do that we'll look at doing in the near future. You know, whether it be doing more canning or doing more 12 packs or something like that. But I wouldn't put a date on any of that stuff right now.
Yeah, it's been really interesting. You know, we try to plan. I'm a planner. It drives me nuts when I can't plan accordingly. And I've really had to force myself to be, as counterintuitive as it is for me, to be more reactionary in these past few months. And learn to, all right, well, this is what we're up against this week, so we've got to play that hand we're dealt now, and we'll figure out next week when next week comes.
Right. And it's great. And to a certain degree, it's fun to go out and see how people are improvising. One of my main jobs here.
It's going to be a lot more fun when it's over.
One of my main jobs here at the brewery is going out and doing sales. So I go out to bars and restaurants and talk to different people. And it's interesting how many different approaches people are taking.
Yeah.
Not only to the physical separation of people, you know, who's using what kind of seating and plexiglass and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, who's doing takeout, who's getting ramping back up. I mean, I talked to a restaurant in North Raleigh, and he was like, man, you know, we started doing takeout only. One of the first things I did was cut down my menu. He's like, I couldn't wait to get rid of that soup. He was talking about one soup in particular on his menu.
Yeah.
He's like, I've been eyeballing that thing for a year, and that was the first thing I did was cut the soup off the menu. He's like, I felt so good. It's like, all right, you know, that's one person that, all right, they found their little glimmer in this tragedy, and that's what they're taking away. They finally got to take that soup off the menu. So I think everybody has their own way of approaching it.
On our own way of just dealing with it, finding that, laughing at the pain or dealing with that little glimmer of hope.
Right. So why, getting back to the beer, as I pull an Eschbaugh here, I've been thinking more about the pale ale. In all the changes and everybody trying to do New England or modern IPAs, or when Eschbaugh and Mason Jar Lager Company decided to bring back the lagers, right?
Kudos.
And now everybody has one, you know? And why is it that the pale ale continues to just be that steady thing while everything else has gone all over the map and everybody's signature beer seems to shift from time to time?
I think there's a lot of people that maybe kind of grew up on it, and it was one of their first craft beers, and so they like it, and it's their go-to kind of standard. I think to a certain degree, I mean, going back to people that started drinking it 25 years ago, their taste, they've kind of gotten away from the new, different, everyday kind of thing.
Yeah.
The consumer of the Carolina Pale Ale may be not the typical 20 to 30. It might be a little bit older consumer.
I'm glad you brought that up.
Who's not every week trying to look. Who doesn't go into a bar saying, what's new? He goes into a bar saying, do you have my favorite?
Yes.
It's XYZ. So I think that it's a little bit different consumer, and I don't know where the break is around that. Probably around 40 years old or so between people higher people.
Well,
I think it's
a nostalgic beer, right? It's that beer that a lot of folks cut their teeth on. Mm-hmm. You know, I moved in here in 06. Definitely my first 12 pack of North Carolina beer was Carolina Pale Ale, and it would stay in my refrigerator.
But like I'm kind of glad you went in that direction, because it kind of
40, by the
affirms
way.
What I've thought about with the Pale Ale specifically is that I have my father-in-law likes craft beer. Mm-hmm. And he's 60. So it's like, you know, yeah, I know, Wayne. I know. So.
Who needs the couch now?
Right. Now Wayne's having his existential crisis of being old. No, so, but like the thing is, you know, he has his craft beers that he still drinks. He's a 60-minute Dogfish IPA guy. He's a Carolina Pale Ale guy. Like, these are the craft beers that he, I guess, cut his teeth on when he moved away from Budweiser and whatever.
He does. And he doesn't ask you to bring over a peach sour when he's going to
No. It's not that he won't drink them if I bring over a variety of things. He's curious about the stuff. But ultimately, after he's had the one, all right, I'm going to go back to what I'm used to drinking.
Right.
And that's what I was curious about when it came to the pale ale, is that if there's a an age demographic line delineation that comes with it.
Yeah, and I haven't done any big surveys on it or stuff like that, but if I had to guess, I'd say yes.
Okay, That's what I assumed. That's what I assumed. Because, I mean, Adam and I had this conversation a while back. There's another North Carolina brewery that I asked, well, why don't we get him on the podcast? And he's like, because it's not really a craft beer drinker's independent craft beer place. I went, oh, okay, I never really thought about that. But then I started putting two and two together. I'm like, you know what? Yeah, every time I see them, they're usually listed with all the other macros. It just happened to be a North Carolina one. And I didn't know if the pale ale kind of tracked in the same way, in that the pale ale drinkers are the pale ale drinkers, and they're going to stick with it, and that's the end of it. I was just curious if that held true even today.
I think that's the base of it, but I think there's certainly other people, the younger people, that will enjoy it too.
Yeah.
I mean, if you go to a venue and they've got pale ale, a lot of people will go for it. It's reasonably priced and stuff like that. But I think those are the type of people that will have one pale ale, and then they're going to go over and have an IPA, and then they're going to go over and have a stout from that company. Whereas I think the little bit older crowd tends to, as you said, that's what they're going to stick for that.
Yeah, speaking a little bit younger, Joe, I identify as 37, so I'm 37, so don't forget that. But yeah, I agree with what you said there, Joe. You've got those people that go in, they get accustomed to drinking that beer, and they go in and ask, hey, do you have this? Not, what have you got? And, you know, when I first started drinking craft beer, it was Aviator's Hot Rod Red. Only because the first night they opened their tap room in Verena, a friend of mine took me there. I met Mark. I liked, you know, I just liked the environment and the beer. And I would walk into places, and if they didn't have Hot Rod Red, I had a friend one time say, look, I can't go to dinner with you anymore, because if you don't have Hot Rod Red, you leave and go find somewhere that does. So it's no longer Hot Rod Red, but it is Carolina Pale Ale. It's Dell's Pale Ale. It's Sierra Nevada Pale Ale. All of the pale ales are the ones that I tend to look for and go for. And that's, which is why, like I said, I had that one at Bond the other day, because for me, I've gone back to what I really liked early on, and I've gotten away from needing to try all of these crazy beers. I don't, just give me basic beer.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't think that's an age thing, and we've had this conversation multiple times. I don't think it's an age thing. I think it's more of a stage thing, and I don't want to sound pretentious, but a maturity thing. Like I've experienced these things. Not that I'm closing myself off to new experiences, but I know what I like. There's a reason these guys have been around long enough, and I know it's well-made beer, and that's what I want. And speaking of which, like the past few weeks, I've gone to the grocery store. I don't buy a lot of beer anymore, obviously. I usually don't need to, but I've gone and intentionally bought like an original favorite, if that makes sense. A few weeks ago, Centennial IPA. Before that, it was Bell's Two Hearted.
Yeah.
This week, I bought some Dogfish 60 Minute. And it's been cool to go back and, you know, kind of re-experience those beers. Remember the first, like, because I've got memories of the first time or early times that I enjoyed those beers, and then to like think back about those and then enjoy them now, having all that other experience, and they're still just really fantastic beers. There's something to be said for that.
I agree. I absolutely agree. And then sometimes you just got to have a high life.
Yeah, I mean, there's a time and a place. Like you said, from day one.
Yeah, I know.
Over, by the way, we didn't even mention our anniversary podcast this year.
No,
you were probably on vacation again.
You know what? Much like Wayne gets caught up in his feelings when we reference age, when you guys remind me how long I've been doing this.
2014, man.
It depresses me. All right.
I don't get caught up in the age. I really don't.
That's fine. You identify as 37. I best...
Don't forget it.
Yeah, I know.
I did tell you this story about when we had two birthdays for Wayne. We sang happy birthday to him.
Yeah.
There's this dichotomy of Wayne's personality where he's either like an old grumpy old man like Clint Eastwood, get off my lawn.
Yeah.
Or he's like peak puberty. Hey, guys.
Guys,
listen to this. listen to this stuff. I got to tell you this.
Guys.
There's really not much in between there sometimes.
True. That's a valid point.
His good friends know him, you know, for really who he is. But that's really where, you know, the scales tip either way. So after Biracana, we sang happy birthday to him and had two sets of candles. And one was like 14 and the other was like 13. The other was like 68. And you got to pick which number you wanted to sing to.
So, Joe, before we get out of here, and again, appreciate you letting us hang out.
Absolutely. It's great to have you.
What's the takeaway? What do you want people to know about Carolina Brewing after 25 years of existence?
I think probably the main thing that people should take away is that we are just really into good beer. We're into good, clean, well-packaged beer. We never wanted to be the brewery leader in the Southeast. We never wanted to take over the shelves. All we wanted to do is make really good beer that we enjoyed and we hoped our friends would enjoy.
I'd say it's working out for you.
It's pretty simple. People often ask me, you know, dude, this is where you think you'd be in 25 years, you know, but looking back on it. And I often say, no way. I would have guessed one of two scenarios. If you asked me back in 95, I would have said by 2020, we're either going to be a really big, like, national brewery or we're going to be out of business. Mm-hmm. And we never planned on it, but somehow we managed to find this space in between where we all operate at a level that we enjoy. We enjoy coming into work still. We enjoy the beers that we make. On any given day, there's usually one or two of the partners out at the tap room enjoying the beer, mm-hmm. talking to customers and stuff like that. So I like it. It's become more of almost a family type business, even though we're not family. It's become more of that type of business than I would have ever suspected.
That's awesome. That is awesome.
Well, tap room hours, just so people know, if they haven't been out here.
Yeah, so they're different now because
you guys are Wednesday through Sunday?
Oh, the pandemic. We're doing Wednesday through Sunday, exactly. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, we open up at 4, and then on Saturday and Sunday, we open up at noon. And then we're typically open until about 8 o'clock most nights.
It's no longer a dirt or gravel road. It's paved.
It's paved, folks.
Come on out.
Drew, outside seating. Bring your pet.
There you go. Yeah. Thanks again for having us out.
Absolutely.
That's going to wrap it up for this edition of the 919 Beer Podcast. If you've missed any of our previous conversations, it's all available on the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. 5 stars only. Don't let Wayne's curmudgeon-y-ness get in the way, or my rants on masks that don't fit me, so I wear a bandana that I look like I'm going to Coachella Festival. So somebody in my Instagram commented on that because I'd taken a selfie with Kelly one of these days and I had one of my bandanas.
Kelly,
on.
Your wife who wears a mask that fits.
Yes. She has a perfectly symmetrical face, unlike mine.
I do want to add one thing.
Yeah.
As we are now approaching the reopening of hockey season.
Yes.
As far as I know, Carolina Pale Ale is the only North Carolina brewed beer ever to be drunk out of the Stanley Cup.
Mm.
The Stanley Cup was brought to Blinko's Sports Bar in 2006.
Oh my gosh, shout Blinko's.
Shout out to Jim Blinko. Yeah, man, now, that's a day that takes me back. Jeez.
So that was a two-story place, right?
No, this is the second Blinko's.
No.
This isn't the original Blinko's on Falls of the News. This is the Blinko
This was when I started working at 850 The Buzz. Blinko's was across the street, and like if you did anything after the show or whatever, that was our usual gathering.
Patrick Morgan was always over there.
Oh, yeah. We would do
Morgan Patrick.
Morgan, the sports pig, not Patrick Morgan. You might give away the game there.
Nope.
So, anyway,
the Stanley.
True story. My first name is actually Ovias. No, anyway.
This is 620 The Ball, right? The Balls.
850 The Balls.
850 The Balls.
Yeah, back in 2006. Yes. Yeah. So it's the only one that actually had an orchid. Because I'm trying to remember when I drank out of the cup at Linda's in Chapel Hill.
I would imagine not many people are going to drink out of the cup this year after each other.
I
think
know.
That's probably a tradition that's going to change a little bit. Although they're all in the bubble there, so they're all swapping sweat anyway.
Yeah.
You're not going to find it out at bars. So North Carolina brewed beer. So I know it was brought around to plenty of bars and got drunk out of
a lot of people.
But we've got pictures of Blinko pouring Carolina Pale Ale from the tap into the Stanley Cup and then drinking out of it.
Perfect.
Mine was a Miller Lite with Kevin Adams at his place in New York.
So okay.
It was not a North Carolina Pale Ale, I promise you.
I'm pretty sure it was Yingling that was poured into it at Linda's.
Back when they won the Cup in 2006, there was only maybe 15 or 20 breweries in North Carolina.
Right.
I think at that point, I think we
were
the only
one. Were there that many?
I think we were the only one in Wake County at that point.
You guys, Natty Greens, but they were technically...
Natty Greens wasn't around in 2006. in here locally.
Yeah.
2006, that was still like...
I'm trying to just think of the beers. Highland.
Oh, the beers. Yeah, you're looking at Highland. You're looking at Natty Greens. You're probably looking at... Yeah.
Green Shield was already gone by then.
Big Boss wasn't here yet, right? Big they Boss were, what, 08? You know, the down Yuli's place...
was Red Oak around?
Weeping Radish.
Red Oak was here. Weeping Radish.
Red Oak was around. Okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Who could forget about Weeping Radish? Right. But you couldn't get Weeping Radish around here. So...
I've got a picture
of it. That's a great trivia fact.
There you go.
It's the only one. That's awesome.
As far as I know, I've never had anybody else tell me about it.
All right. Fair enough.
It was definitely the only one consumed from Blinko's that night.
Blinko's, man. I can still see the cigarette stains on the tile, on the acoustic tile on the ceiling. That place was quite something. Still to this day, though, Jim had it figured out with the wings. He had it figured out.
I just remember the commercials. I never went there. I was more of a
once they moved from the Falls of the Noose location
to Glenwood and
somewhere near Pleasant Valley.
Yeah, Glenwood.
It was never
they
the
were
same.
There. Okay, I was a
and they lost Oki, who was the cook, and the food just wasn't the same.
I was a Brick House.
Playmakers. Yeah, I was Playmakers
before it was Brick House.
Yeah, Playmakers at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, Joe, you just took me back with that Blinko's reference, man. It's that now again. Now I'm feeling old. What do we got coming up?
Use
on the
your huge bandana to wipe away the tears, nostalgic tears.
What are we
trying to figure that out? I want to get back down to our place, my place, at some point.
Why
talk,
you talk about
Dave?
You talk about your brewery enough.
You know what?
The 919 Beer Podcast.
I'll tell other people. Hey,
I've actually
one
thought
day
about
you can have your own podcast.
I was going to say I've actually thought about renaming
about
the podcast. The Mason Jar Lager Company reference fest that occasionally talks to other breweries.
Wow, see, this is why we get 1-star ratings.
Yeah,
because crap like this.
Right. If you want to have a home game, we can have a home game.
Jeez.
That's fine. We'll go out.
I haven't talked to my buddy Dave in like 3 years.
Really?
Yes.
That's probably because
I don't think we've been on since we opened.
It's probably because I see him. I feel like it's whatever. All right, we'll go out there next week. That's fine.
I just like making you drive to Fuquay.
Dude, you're killing me.
Yeah.
Killing me.
It's like 7 minutes down the road from where we are right now. It's not that bad.
Putting miles on my Honda Fit after
I
just bought
I've got the next couple lined up,
all right.
I believe.
We'll go out to Mason Jar next week.
I think.
Maybe. Hopefully we can book Dave. I know he's busy.
Well, we transferred canning days, so we will be available
all right.
on Wednesday.
Fair enough. Have an IPA on tap for Wayne. Yes. That's it. That'll wrap it up. We will see you all next week.
Cheers.
Thanks.
You've been listening to the 919 Beer Podcast with hosts Joe Ovius, Adam Eshbaugh, and Wayne Holt. Don't forget, there are many ways you can listen to this podcast, including streaming at WRALSportsFan.com, the WRAL Sports Fan app. And you can also subscribe for free at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Pocket Casts, and TuneIn. This podcast also airs Saturday mornings at 8 on Buzz Sports Radio. Thanks again for listening to the 919 Beer Podcast.